to welcome you to the next episode, discussion and podcast of Budapest Pride's Academy. My name is Dodo Kashi. My pronouns are they and them, and I'm a former organizer of Budapest Pride. So hello to the whole team and thank you for your work. And I'm also from Hungary. Sziasztok mindenkinek! Ez a beszélgetés angolul lesz, és hogyha a Budapest Pride csapatnak majd lesz ideje lefordítani, akkor reméljük, hogy magyarul is elérhető lesz pár hét vagy hónap múlva. Yes, and today we're going to talk about different forms of support for those most vulnerable, most marginalized within the LGBTQ community in Hungary. And we have an amazing, outstanding, and fantastic panel and six incredible activists, and I'm so honored to welcome them. But before we go any further, today is the 17th of June, and 2 days ago, the Hungarian parliament adopted a law which practically criminalizes our communities. So the law against pedophilia, with the last minute amendment, now makes the promotion, the discussion, and the representation of same-sex relations and trans identities, legal gender recognition. Obviously, it wasn't phrased like so beautifully in the law, but so anything trans and anything LGB is basically banned in Hungary. So it's been an incredibly dark and devastating week for people in the community. And we are not quite sure what the practical consequences of the law are going to be. We don't know if this means that absolutely any discussion about LGBTQI issues will have to be immediately suspended in school. We don't know what the consequences will be on teachers and schools and parents and students. We don't know if this means articles cannot mention LGBTQI people at all. If any news reporting about Budapest Pride or a trans march or adoption by a lesbian couple somewhere in Europe, obviously not in Hungary because that is also banned, if that is going to fly on TV or in other media outlets, we don't know if Netflix will have to stop streaming Glee or other shows that include LGBTQI characters. So we don't know yet. But what is for certain is that we are an EU country, which now has a propaganda kind of law in place that Russia has first adopted in 2013. And that is not okay. And we are in a crisis. We're in crisis mode. And I really hope that this discussion and this podcast can provide some kind of support and community and hope to all of you who are listening. Yes, so without further ado, I would like to introduce our amazing panelists. Budapest Pride is participating in a project where they're doing an experience and skill exchange with activists, mostly from the United States, but not only. And so this discussion is taking place in the framework of that. But I know that Budapest Pride has organized other panel discussions with other activists. Sorry, I can't speak with this thing on. With other activists from the region. And I hope that there's gonna be a podcast one day with activists who live in countries where such a propaganda law is in place. And I'm sure that we will be able to learn a lot from them how to navigate. But now we're going to focus on our fantastic panel. So I would like to briefly introduce everyone, but I will then actually pass it over to them so they can say who they are. But I would like to welcome Kevin Perez from Somos Familia Valle. Los Angeles-based, amazing community-based organization working or established and led by LGBTQI people of color, first-generation college students and immigrants, such a wonderful group. I would also like to welcome Bambi Salcedo and hi, from the Trans Latina Coalition, who are working across the US with the trans Latina immigrants. And also, this is Budapest Pride people on my screen. Yes, also Luis from Mexico, from the Association for Transgender Children, and Luis's mom, Tanya. And we have another parent in the room, Tena Gisella, who's, I guess, a recurring character on Budapest Pride's podcasts, and Hungarian-American parent. So she's from PFLAG, and I was just messaging with my sister, actually, because about 15 years, we saw a movie where an American movie and someone was talking about PFLAG, and it was translated into Hungarian as Leme Szuba. And that was so funny, leszbikusok és melegek szülei és barátai, that we laughed about it, like, a lot. And I just texted her, I was like, I can't believe I'm going to be speaking to someone from Leme Szuba. Leme Szuba sounds really funny in Hungarian. So, yeah. Anyway, so thank you so much. And I'm going to pass it over to you so you can introduce yourselves briefly. Yes, where you're based, who you are. If you want to mention pronouns, please go for it, and what your organizations are, and so on. The floor is yours. Kevin, can you start?
Yes, of course. Thank you so much. Hello, everybody. My name is Kevin. Pronouns he, him, his. And I am from a grassroots org in San Fernando Valley, California, in the U.S. We do a lot of work with youth. So I'm very excited to be here to talk about representation, especially this law that was introduced and passed. So thank you so much for inviting me. And yeah.
Luis?
Hi, everybody. I'm really honored to be here. Thank you. My name is Luis Diado. I am from Mexico City, and me and my mom started this organization that tries to accompany transgender families and children through the processes that either legal or familiar and emotional processes that come with being trans in society. And my pronouns are he, him, and I'm really happy to be here. Thank you.
Thanks, Louise. Tanya, do you want to go next?
Hi, everyone. I am Tanya. Thank you for the space here. I'm a lawyer. I'm a proud mom of Luis, and we started an association in Mexico City, but we work with families in Mexico and in the other places that speaks in Spanish or English, if we can attend, but making a web, yes, and that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Tanya. Bambi?
Bueno, primero que nada, quiero saludar a las personas que son hispanoparlantes, mandarles un abrazo y un saludo. Greetings, siblings. My name is Bambi Salcedo, and I do have the honor to greet you from Tangba Land in Los Angeles, California. I do have the privilege to be the president and the CEO of the Trans Latino Coalition, which is a national advocacy organization that is specifically focuses on advocating for the needs and issues of trans Latina immigrant women, but just the trans Latina community as a whole. In addition to that, we have Part of the work that we do, we have a multi-purpose, multi-service space here in Los Angeles that is specifically dedicated to support, directly support trans, gender non-conforming, intersex, and non-binary people through, you know, just making sure that our people are empowered through the services that they need. I'm extremely honored, I'm humbly honored that I can be in this space with all of you and that I have the opportunity to share my experience, strength, and hope as a trans Latina mujer emigrante indocumentada que vive en los Estados Unidos. Gracias.
Thank you so much, Bambi. Gisela?
Oops. Jó napot kívánom mindenki, és szeretlek nagyon, és veletek vagyok. Good morning, everybody. My name is Gisela Sene, pronouns she, ella, and I'm the proud parent of a queer kid and a member of PFLAG Los Angeles. PFLAG is an organization, a volunteer-based organization of parents, friends, and families allied with the LGBTQ plus community. Our goal is to first support people. Our love has no borders. And that's why I am so happy that today we're here with you Hungarians from Mexico and Los Angeles, because we love you. Art, we love you. We love the entire LGBTQ plus community. So we support you. We try to educate the world about the community we love. And we also advocate for you. When there's a court case that comes up, out, we send the letters, we share the information. We will go there. We support you. We're there to support and love you. And our love truly has no borders. And I'm so thankful to Budapest Pride for inviting us. And also so thankful to my fellow mama, Tanya, Bambi, Luis, and Kevin. Thank you so much for coming here to support the people I love.
Thank you so much, Gisela, and for everyone. For the intro. Before we go on and start the actual discussion, I was thinking of how we could support our community from here, from Mexico, from the US. I'm also abroad. I'm checking in from Sweden. What is it that we can do from afar? And I thought that we would do a 1 minute of love and warmth and safety and sending that to all of you Hungarian LGBTQI folks, friends, community members who are sitting at home. I've spoken to many of you this week. I've read so many of your powerful posts on social media, and I know that some of you haven't had it in themselves to get out of bed this week. Some of you have been spending hours at home crying. Some of you have been trying to figure out how to leave, whether you're going to lose your job, how you're gonna protect your child. So I want you to just relax into this moment. If you want, close your eyes, and all six of us will be sending you massive amounts of love, support, energy, strength, and warmth. So just feel that. I hope you felt it. I hope this moment can stay with you. We're very happy to repeat it at the end. And if you feel the need to return to it later, please, please do so. Okay, so thank you everyone for joining me in this. I was afraid that this is going to be super cheesy, but I don't care, whatever, even if it's cheesy. I hope if it helps one person, it's great that we did it. Okay. Yes. So I wanted to check in with you actually first to know whether the news about the law has reached you. We've seen reporting across Europe on BBC, also on CNN. We have seen the Council of Europe respond, the European Commission respond. Yes, but are we totally isolated? Are we completely alone? Has this made any kind of headlines where you are? Have you heard about this? Yes, if anyone would like to answer, please go ahead.
My friend Diamant Agnes of the Hungarian families who support their LGBTQ plus children sent me the petition to sign, and I noticed that on, I think Monday, there were over 100,000 signatures in support of the petition to vote against this terrible law. So I did hear about it from a mother, a Hungarian mother.
Yeah, so like as Gisela mentioned, this petition has been circulated. I'm going to ask the Budapest Pride admins if you could post it under the Facebook Live. If it makes you feel any better, please sign it, even though the law has been passed. Maybe it does make a difference as the president hasn't signed the law. And I wanted to give a big shout out to all the organizations and activists that have been working really hard in the past couple of days, also in the past couple of years, decades, but okay. Yes, so in the past couple of days, and for everyone who showed up at the demonstration on Monday, for Hatted, for compiling the testimonies and letters to President Ader. And don't sign it, President. Yes, anyone else would like to answer in any way?
Well, here in Mexico, I think that if it hadn't been for you guys, we wouldn't have known about the law. But I think that's what shows how important it is to make like networks and community, because then it is not, we are not up to media or mainstream media to know what is happening if the whole world community of LGBT people support each other and we inform each other. It is a lot easier to keep in contact and keep doing what we can from abroad too. So yeah, it's kind of bittersweet, I'd say.
Anyone else?
So I think first I want to acknowledge and recognize, right, that the experience of the United States is completely different than other parts of the world. And we, you know, I know that unfortunately the oppression that we continue to experience as, you know, LGBTQ, queer people, trans people specifically, right? It's really universal, right? We know that in other countries, the oppression gets to the point to like, we get killed simply, you know, for existence, right? And so, but I think what is important also to recognize is the resiliency of our people, right? you know, as you mentioned a little while ago, right? People have been organizing, people have been protesting, and people have been mobilizing to ensure that particularly this type of oppression in Hungary, it does not continue, right? And you know, I think it's also important for us to understand and recognize that, you know, legislation truly dictates the way people live their lives, right? And so what I want for us to really understand, and those who are watching this session or listening to this session, is that we need to continue to fight, right? We need to understand the power that we have as people, but also as a community, right? The LGBTQ community, you know, essentially, you know, started sort of like turning the page on the oppression that we experience fairly recent, right? I mean, we know about, you know, probably in the past 50 years, specifically in the United States, right? Like how people started organizing, but there's still a lot of work that needs to be done. Even in the United States, as a trans woman, right? Many people think that, you know, trans people have better lives than in other parts of the world. And the truth is that in the United States, in, you know, the country that, you know, claims to be more, I guess, civil rights conscious, right? Civil rights conscious, it's not necessarily true. Even, you know, in the United States, there are right now, you know, legislation, pieces of legislation in 33 states that are pushing for the exclusion of trans youth, right? And so I think what is most important for us to understand is truly, again, the oppression that we face as people, regardless where we are, right? But most importantly, you know, for us to really think on ways for us to continue to push, and for us to continue to resist, and for us to understand that our existence is important in this world, right? And we as organizers, as people who understand how all of the systems work, need to continue to push for the new generations that are coming up, right? Because, you know, they're the ones who are going to continue the legacy of oppression. I mean, the legacy of eliminating the oppression, right? Because the oppression and the marginalization that we experience is not going to end anytime soon, unfortunately. But what we need to recognize is that we need to continue to push and organize for us to have a better world for all of us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Bambi. And on that note, those that are carrying forward the legacy, young people, several of you, like I said, are either young people or working with young people. Can you talk a little bit about the lived realities of young people in your communities? And Thank you.
I'll add into that. I think one of the things, especially in my community with young people, and I guess you would call them like Gen Z, right? Like people like from 12 to 18, you know, still developing. I think it's they've come to a moment in time in history where, you know, we're coming out early. We're breaking those closet walls, and we're you know, finally being liberated of our sexual identities and gender identities. And I think it's so important to have that representation when it comes to like media or books, you know, even social media, where, like we talk about the TikTok world and like a lot of kids are on YouTube and TikToks and they're learning about, they're having the space and the access to learn about so many different identities and they're finding it so early. And I think it's something to be celebrated, right? And I think what just the laws that, you know, that we talked about that's happening in Budapest, it's very against that. It's that it's trying to stop that because they know, you know, the internet has given us access to so much. I know when I was growing up as a middle school student, trying to find my identity, it was very difficult. I remember going to the dictionary or like things like that, but now it's like so easy to learn about it. Even when school is not teaching it, you know, there's other ways when you have an internet source. So now, like, it's very important to you know, address how these systems are attacking these resources, this information. And I think what you mentioned was like, well, is this gonna be like, now they can't say it in media? Are they gonna ban certain hashtags or things like that? And I think that's where youth learn, right? And a lot of my youth are always like, I love this queer gamer, I love this queer TikToker, and I love this. And I think systems are finally learning that kids are like learning so much about themselves. And I think that's where we need to see how we could fight against that. Because, you know, youth just wanna like thrive and just want to like celebrate themselves. And I think there's no turning back. I think there is that resistance that Bambi was talking about. Like, it's an explosion. And although there's these legislations, like we know we have chosen family and we know we could come together. And even being in this Zoom or coming together to talk about the situation. But yeah.
Thanks so much for this, Kevin. There's no turning back. That's a good motto for the next months or years to come. And oh my God, yes, there's so much out there. Like, if I had had access to all of this information when I was a young person, I would have come out of the closet like 10 years earlier. Oh, it would have been, it would have been awesome. But yeah, I mean, the big difference in my life, for instance, was meeting trans people for the first time, knowing that it is possible to be non-binary. So I really do hope that kids and young people in Hungary will continue to have access to the TikToks, and which is like very difficult for me to comprehend because I'm like 36 and I'm like, what is that? I'm like behind with like Snapchat. Like, what was that? I don't know. Anyway, but it's, yeah. So TikTok, YouTube, Snapchat, all of the Instagram, all of those things. And you know, it's interesting because even in countries like Russia, where the propaganda law has been in force for 8 years now, the public attitudes towards LGBT people have never been more positive, you know? So you might try to ban us, but the information is out there. We are out there. We are resilient and fucking amazing. And there's no turning back. Yeah. Luis.
Here in Mexico, as I had said, we work with transgender children, and myself, well, I am 17, so like I still are inside, I guess, that youth part, I hope. I think what is great and we're seeing is that we are starting to realize that children have an identitarian autonomy too, because usually, and children, talking about children is so difficult inside the LGBTQ, because they are the people that are more controlled inside this narrative or of the traditional family and the culture. Like, it's this patronizing attitude of this traditional families towards children, and this idea that children cannot speak for themselves, cannot think for themselves, do not have a identity of their own. And to see children of 6, 7 years to say, I am this, and you have to respect me because this is who I am, and I want you to not just respect me, but accompany me with, like, through my process and through my life, is so powerful, because then we give children their voices too, and to also give children the space to be actively, like politically active, and to be able to look out for their rights and to talk for their rights. It's also very important, more with the narratives, because when you have, you can be visible, if you have the privilege to be visible and in a background, or in a background where like you are not putting yourself in danger for being visible. When you have that privilege, it's so important to actually give a voice and to stand up for yourself and being visible, because then it is a way to counteract this propaganda and this media, because maybe they can ban media, but they cannot ban you as a person being visible in your community. And when you give children the opportunity to see you and to see your story, it's a way to tell them that there are many possible futures for them, and that there are futures for them. And I think that's really powerful, and that's something that we all can do as activists, that to give them the right to see themselves in somewhere, and to share your story with them, and then maybe accompany them to find their story. So I really believe that we are doing a work in which we can give power to the youth to so that they can continue on fighting for the rights. Yeah.
Luis, so you were actually the one with your mom who started your organization. Can you talk a little bit more about how you give this power to trans kids?
Sure. Well, we initiated this association because there wasn't any here in Mexico. I came out as transgender when I was 13, and we did not have any information available towards children or transgender youths under 18 years old, as well as the law does not recognize children under 18 years old. It's something that we have been working for, and there has been some progress in these last years, which is like really exciting. But what we do is give tools to children and to families so that they can also get inside public policies or consultings inside federal laws or federal institutions. We have written books too, and have given some workshops to families about not just legislation, but also like activism and health, mental health, how to protect yourselves, how to create community. We also open spaces for transgender families to come together and to meet other transgender people and activists. And so you create a network that has a lot of power and that knows their rights. And that's so important, because when you know your rights, it is a lot easier to, one, get angry because you don't have them. And so like you want to fight for them and want to not just see for yourself, because now you have a whole community to worry about. So like children have gone to consultings for federal and public policies. And now there's a state in Mexico, Jalisco, that is the first state that recognizes transgender children to have their birth certificates. And it's great, because it's not just to recognize transgender children like in a way that they are the only ones that know their identity, but it's also how they give them their birth certificates, because they only need a informed consent from the children. So it's a way to give them power, because then it's not, oh, I depend of my parents, I depend of the state. Like the only thing they depend on is on their voice. And like that gives so much confidence to a child afterwards to be themselves, because of the process and the way they can represent themselves.
That is so powerful, Luis. Thank you so much for sharing and for your amazing work. Kids are really lucky that you started this organization. And I will definitely want to ask some questions from the parents in the room. But before we go on, I wanted to ask Bambi and Kevin if you could talk a little bit more about some concrete forms of how you support youth.
Yeah, so one of the things that I do with Somos Familia Valle is we run a youth program for youth 12 to 17, and it's a leadership program. So we always focus on social justice work and learning about social justice history and a lot of activism and advocacy. So I always make it, we always talk about that this is a brave space, not a safe space. And we always really center the youth. And one of the things that I love is with centering the youth is that they find their voice. They're able to really be advocates for themselves, especially when it comes to like things that happen in school. So like, you know, although we might have these laws, even in a country or like in a city that has, you know, oh, we have gender neutral bathrooms or whatever it may be, there's still bullying going on, or there's still, you know, something at home going on. So the great thing is we have been able to teach the youth like, oh, you know, there's a form, there's a Title IX form that you could fill up if there's bullying going on in your campus, or there's an actual resource of if something's going on at home. And when youth have these things, or they learn about these things, or have these programs, it gives them access to really just, you know, not be ashamed about themselves, not have those suicidal ideations, and really feel committed and connected to a community. I think one of the things and the misconceptions that we see a lot with youth, and like when we talk about LGBT youth, is like, LGBT adults are trying to recruit, or we're trying to like get more LGBT kids, or like, I don't know, it's like this weird thing of like recruitment. And I think this is how systems try to like oppress us even more. And then I think this is maybe it might connect to this, the law that is happening in Budapest, where it's like, we don't want no queer stories because it's going to convince a kid to be queer or trans or whatever it may be. But that's not how our identities work. But sometimes, like, you know, it's just what's written in law that it's just weird to us. But I think when youth have that space, the leaders, the mentors, you know, I was a youth too, and I remember like the people who I thought like that helped me be like liberated and free were actually like queer women and trans women, like that, like gave us the space to just like, you know, play around, just be free and like talk about like all our identities. So, and then being with other trans and queer youth is also very empowering. I see so many of our youth just be so excited just to be in a group of 10 and like be like, oh my God, you're from that part of town and you live so close to me and I'm so excited. Oh, what's your phone? And it's just that connection that is created is so much power. Like, you don't even know, it's like you could see it in their face, how much they smile and how excited they are. But yeah, giving them that space, that connection, that chosen family is so important.
That was so beautiful. Thank you. I so agree. It's not like we will turn queer or trans. It's just that when we have access to information and community, then we can realize that this is something we can be. It just destroys shame and secrecy. And So this whole idea of recruitment is fascinating. Like, I've never met a recruiter. Like, where are the recruiters? Like, yeah, I don't know. Okay, Bambi, did you want to add anything?
I think it's important to be transparent, right? Although we do work with youth, we don't work with minors, right? We function as a nonprofit organization, and obviously working with minors is like a whole, I'm gonna say like a different ball game, right? Like, you have to obviously comply with particular standards that you have to, right? Like for legality purposes, but also I think young people have very specific, and when I say young people, I'm talking about like, you know, 17 and younger, right? And so we don't have like specific programming for younger than 18, but we do have programming for young people who are 18 and over. And 2 years ago, I think we started a program that is called the SOL program, which is Seeds of Liberación, which is a leadership development program specifically for young people who are transgender nonconforming, in which they, you know, it's a 3-month comprehensive program in which young people learn about like institutional oppression and organizing and you know, policy and all of those things, and it's you know, we're also stipending young people for their time, and you know, we also like through that we do like sort of like civic engagement. We take them to, you know, the like spaces that are not necessarily designed for us, right? Like to create visibility, like City Hall, for instance, or even a museum, right? And things like that. And it really is on a way for young people to not just be visible, but also to claim their space, right? Everywhere and anywhere they would want to walk into. So that is, you know, that is one specific program that we have. But then again, you know, the services that we provide here are specifically dedicated for people who are 18 and over. And we certainly serve young people in the different programs that we have. For instance, you know, young people who are criminalized or incarcerated simply because of who they are, they can access services through our reentry services. We also have HIV prevention services that young people also have access to. And then we also have a violence prevention project that also young people have access to. And all of the other, you know, services, we do also workforce development. So young people have access to that too. And we have a transitional housing program also that, you know, if someone is 18 and over, people can also have access to housing. So again, you know, we have a multiplicity of programs, not specifically designed for young people, but young people 18 and over can definitely have access to the multiplicity of services that we offer.
Thank you, Bambi. I know that now that the law is passed, there are many LGBTQI young people, but also their parents who are extremely worried. Tanya and Gisela, it would be really lovely if you could talk about how you as parents have supported your kids.
Well, I think first, I am a feminist, a lawyer, but a proud mom. So all of did these things maybe make or give me the power to not just accept the identity of my son. I think the next step is fight for his rights. I think is the next step that the families have to to make to be a better world. I think that human rights will never be permanently conquered, because there are persons and movements that ever try to take away from us. And I say from us because if the families assumed part of the diversity by having a member of that diversity, we will be able to make changes more quickly for our well-being. So in Mexico, the pride slogan in the virtual march is resistance and unity. I think that resistance and unity means for not only for the LGBTQ communities, maybe who quien debería ser, me ayudas Luis, la resistencia y unidad debe ser para las familias y también para los movimientos feministas junto con la comunidad LGBTIQ+.
So the resistance and unity shouldn't just be of the LGBT community, but also from feminists and families and all the people that are close to the LGBTQ community to create like this huge group that is not just like trans or LGBTQ community, but like a whole group that has a connection with the diversity. And those should also be inside the unity and resistance. And if, like what you like to finalize, like what she was saying is that like if there was such a big group like that, that all the people that are connected with a person in the diversity, then we would almost be all of us inside, like all humankind inside this group. And so it would be a lot easier to make changes if we all assumed that we were from the diversity. Yeah.
And the last thing that I want to say is that I know that Luis have the right to be just like he is. Is the right, it's not a permission, it's not a, I don't believe that is que es un permiso social, sino es tu derecho. Y de ahí parte todo.
Yeah, no one is giving me, like no one is making me a favor for recognizing me as a trans person, or like no one is, it's not a social permit that I was giving, it's a right that I have. And then like, it's a right to be me. And yeah.
Thank you. Oh, I just got a message from a trans friend who wrote, for whom basically what you just said, Tanya, is extremely meaningful. We need more of you, parents, please, not just accept and celebrate us, but fight with us. We really need you more than ever. Tanya, how does it feel to fight with your son?
¿Puedo hablarlo en español y lo traduces? Para mí ha sido un placer poder, perdón, está pasando un avión, es un placer y es una inspiración todos los días, porque Luis me ha enseñado muchas cosas, pero además me ha acercado a una familia mucho más grande de personas trans, de familias trans. Y me parece que ese es el inicio de un movimiento mucho más grande que únicamente de las personas trans. Somos una comunidad grande.
So she says that it has been a pleasure and an inspiration to fight alongside, because I have given her the opportunity to get inside a much bigger family from the LGBTQ community. And so to fight with a new family that is so big and it's like this chosen family that has our back, it's been like this great way to find ourselves in a place of love and of respect for each other. Yeah.
Yeah. It's beautiful. Okay. My inner child is like so happy, but also crying a little bit. Okay. I wanted to ask Gisela. You're also a super proud and active fighter parent. Please tell us a little bit about how you supported your kid.
You know, I think what Luis said at the beginning really resonated with me about accompanying your child on their journey. So many times parents call us at PFLAG and to say, oh, my kid just told me that they're gay, or they identify as trans. What, you know, what are you, do you think they're sure? How can they be sure? I'm so worried for them. And how do we, how, you know, how do we make sure that they really are who they are? And we always tell them, you know, your job is to accompany them on the journey and not question who or what or how. They just support them on their journey. And you know, also what Tanya said about it's not just acceptance, it's not just telling a child, okay, you're trans, that's great, it's okay with me, I give you permission to be trans. It means going to the school and making sure, like Kevin said, that there is affirming spaces for them in school. It's making sure that you reach out to communities and people, mentors like Bambi, like Kevin, like all of you, showing our children these exist. I mean, of course they have TikTok, of course they have all that stuff. I don't even know. I'm sure they know more, but you know what? We know that a child's well-being is based on a strong family support. And for so many of our children, it's their chosen family that matters. So for me, it's important to support people like Kevin and Bambi and Tanya, because I know that they are part of the bigger, like what Tanya said, the bigger community, the bigger family that our children need to thrive, you know? So I would say that's how I supported my child. In the very beginning, I, like so many parents, said, okay, you can like boys, that's okay, but you can't have a boyfriend yet. And that was a terrible thing to say, because you know what? Every child needs love. Who am I to tell my child at the age of 10, you can't love somebody? You can be gay, but you can't love anybody. Come on now, that's, you know, so I've learned that it's exactly what you two, what all of you are saying. It's not the permission, it's supporting, not accepting. It's, how did you say it, Luis? I have the right to be who I am. You say it again, because what you said, that's my goal, Dodo, is with my child, with everyone that I care about, is to do what Luis says. What do I have to do? Tell me.
Oh yeah, that it's our right to be us, and that having the way that we can, like, families can just accompany us on the journey, and it's not just supporting or being like in the back accepting, but actually fighting alongside us. That is, like, I think the most beautiful thing that one can experience. And when you have that, you have all that. I don't know, like this secure armor over you when you have that possibility of fighting alongside a family. So yeah, that's all.
Absolutely. Thank you for saying this, Gisela. I think this resonates, I hope it resonates with parents in Hungary. From a friend of mine, I heard that since the law was passed, a mom who wasn't a fighter before sent an email to all the family members saying that her daughter was queer, and from now on, no negative remarks, anything about her being, because she has enough to deal with this law, and the family needs to be a support base. I really hope that more and more examples from parents are gonna surface in the next few weeks. We definitely need them. And I do remember the first time I saw the parent group marching at Budapest Pride. I mean, that meant so much to me. My mom was also with me, but it was, I just felt safe and valid and okay. And it's really powerful. And Gisela, thank you for helping the parent group from afar in Hungary. I know you've done a lot. And thank you for Agnes, right? Agnes, her name is one of the leaders in the group. Thank you for all of your work. And we really, really need you. And please, parents, be super loud. The kids really need you. I know that Bambi needs to leave in 2 minutes, so I wanted to just give her a chance to send the Hungarian community any kind of message or lesson or anything that you would still like to share.
I also want to express my gratitude for the opportunity to share space with all of you. And I also want for the individuals who are watching or the people who are listening to just send you love and solidarity. And once again, just reiterating the importance of understanding our power, both individual and collectively. And also, my hope is that people don't lose hope, right? Because me personally, just listening to, what the beautiful and amazing mothers, right, who have shared about their experience and their contributions to the struggle. I wish my mother would have the understanding and the education to support me when I was growing up, right? And I think it's important for people to understand that parents, and the support that they provide to all of us when we are coming to be ourselves is one of the nucleus of our development, right? For us to grow and be who we are destined to be. And so for those who are parents, for those who will be parents, I hope that you do understand the true meaning of unconditional love, and that when you present, when you that with, with the fact that your child is going to be who they are going to be, that there's no conditions for that child to exist as they are supposed to be. And that, you do understand what unconditional love is, and that you give that to your child, regardless if they are trans, gender non-confirming, queer, part of the LGBTQ community, And so I just want to, again, send many blessings to all of you, much solidarity, and through our work, understanding that there is solidarity work that needs to happen in order for us to eradicate all the violence that we experience on a daily basis. And it is really up to us to transform the world that we want to live in. And it is up to us to transform the world that we want to live for those who are coming after us. So Once again, I appreciate everyone so much. Thank you for the opportunity to be part of this amazing session, and my deepest gratitude to the beautiful parents who are part of this discussion, and obviously shout out and gratitude for all the work that you're doing, Luis and Kevin and Dodo and everybody else over in Budapest. And don't give up on your dream, don't give up on your right to exist. So thank you again so much. Un abrazo, hasta luego, cuídense mucho. Mil bendiciones. Bye-bye.
Te quiero, Bambi.
Bye, corazón.
Loving all the love here. Yes, we need more of that. What I wanted to address is the possible consequences of the law on youth. I would still like to stay with the topic of youth, if that's okay. We do know that already now 42% of LGBTQI people in Hungary have thought of committing suicide, and 30% of them have tried. We also know that in school, over 50% of LGB kids feel unsafe in school, and over a third of trans kids because of their gender identity or expression. And we also know that verbal and physical harassment or physical abuse is extremely high also. So I wonder, the other thing that we also know is that whenever such a law, such a hostile law is passed or has been passed in our region, or for instance, what's that, Slovenia, where there was a referendum on whether same-sex marriage or marriage equality should be a thing. And whenever all of these hostile discourses are gaining visibility, there is a very clear rise in hate crimes and in cases of discrimination. So that's horrible, and makes me really worried. And I wonder what you think, what you think the possible impact can be. What if kids don't have access to information? What if they can't see themselves on TV or read about themselves in newspaper? What if all they hear in school, which unfortunately is already very common, that being LGBTQI is an illness or some kind of stigma, some kind of horrible thing? What can be the consequence?
So I think one of the things when, you know, new legislation, laws, or any policy is introduced, I think it's important for communities and marginalized communities is to strategize, right? And strategy could look different in many different ways. So I think it's important, since it's about youth and in order to center youth, it's really meeting them at where they're at. And I think this is where it's important. I know we've talked about families, but also and chosen families, but I think it's a great moment to invite people to our chosen families. And yes, we have like accepting parents, but we also need those allies. It's important to strategize, like we need to have those teachers that are allies. We need to have those community members, those people who, you know, the people at the restaurant or people at the bakery or whatever. Those allies are so important. And it's important to invite them. We invite cis straight people to step up and to join us, to be part of our chosen family. Especially when the rise of violence, things are happening, because sometimes even violence might not happen to us individually, but what does happen is trauma. And we remember all the things we've gone through when we were not being accepted, things like that. And our mental health and health just really messes up, right? And And you talk about, like, you know, the rise of suicide, the rise of violence. It's not a good picture for us. So this is a great time to strategize for the safety of youth and to really check in, to find that leader at schools, to find that mentor, to find that parent, really just to keep us safe. I think in the end of the day, we all just want to thrive, and we just want to thrive and, like, be happy and, you know, be fed and, like, play in the playground, whatever it may be. So it's good to strategize in that.
Yeah, absolutely. We just want to thrive and play in the playground. And it just makes me so angry that it's actually kids, it's actually schools where they shut down these conversations. I mean, I have a child, she's 7 years old. She is so incredibly open. She doesn't care, she doesn't care what your gender identity is. She will ask you, she will ask for your pronouns and will respect them, but, like, cool. Like, that's, like, you know, part of a normal part of life for her. So it is just so extremely sad that they're trying to, like, suffocate this group of people who can be really open, really accepting, and just, yeah, all want to thrive. And it is very, very disheartening and disillusioning. Louise, did you have anything to add?
I think my mom wants to speak. I don't know.
Go on, Tanya.
I think that the society have to give a respuesta.
A response.
Maybe in Mexico, and I know that in BFLAG make the same. We make a safe space, safe groups that permit that a trans child know another trans child and know each other and play and have a conversation and make make friends for the future. The same with the families. And I think that if we continuamos haciendo estos grupos seguros, podemos resistir frente a los cambios de institucionales. Permitimos que las personas trans o de la diversidad estén en espacios seguros.
Yeah, if we continue to create these groups and the safe spaces, it is a lot easier to resist the institutional bannings that exist. And so, like, we can create, like, a better place for the future. And, like, if I can add, what we know is that around more than 80% of people do not know, for example, a trans person face to face. They know what they see on the media. So really, it's very important to have then other paths of visibility, because one impression can make the difference when you have just one story about LGBTQ people. And this story is created as, like, this clay model. It's a lot easier to hate it, because then you hate an idea, and you create, like, it's a lot easier to create hate against an idea than a whole community of people. So when you have other paths, either in safe spaces with allies or being visible when you have the possibility, it kind of fights back this only idea of this whole only story of LGBTQ people. And it's not just good to counteract hate speeches, because then you can create empathy and you can create, like, a view that people, we are well-rounded and we have different facets and we are whole human beings. We are not just LGBTQ, we are whole persons that have a life and have a dream and have a future, right? You can also help transgender or LGBTQ people, children, because when you do not see yourself, it is a lot more difficult to love yourself. Like if you, the only thing you are in contact with is a cis heteronormative world where they tell you that you do not exist, then we all want to be happy and we all want to fit in. So the only way we maybe like find ourselves doing that is repressing that part that is LGBTQ so that we can fit in the cis heteronormative society. So to find places where it is possible to share with children, either with other children that are already visible or through families or with teachers that are allies, that transgender and LGBTQ people exist and that they can be happy in the world. It can make it a lot easier for them to then love themselves and find a way to be themselves with the LGBTQ part of them inside society. As well as, for example, me as a trans person, the first moment I saw a trans person in media was a transgender woman that was a corpse in CSI because she was a sex worker and she was murdered. So like, that's not a great way to approach yourself, you know, and you cannot even empathize or like see yourself in that because it is so difficult, different for the life I wanted for myself as a kid and that I knew. Instead, when I read a book about transgender people and then I started having a contact with so much incredible transgender adults, it was like it opened my eyes because first I didn't even want people to know I was trans. Like I wanted to be a man and that's all. Like I didn't want people to know that I was trans because I thought that if I did or say I was trans, then that was the only way I could go, like to that corpse in that episode. But when I started to see transgender adults and being happy and having a community and having families and being like artists or lawyers, and it opened my eyes that there was a lot of other ways to being LGBTQ, and so like that can really make a difference in a child's life and in an adult's life, I think. So it can really be good for everyone, not just to counteract hate speeches and how society views LGBTQ people, but also how we see ourselves.
Thank you, Luis. Amen to that. And you raised so many important points. And yeah, the corpse, like, also, like, whenever you see a show with a trans person or a queer person, you know, we always end up dead. No, I mean, that's always the end of the story. And it's only recently that I've seen movies where we are thriving, or we're the doctor or the lawyer. Or the other day I saw this film with Laverne Cox in it, and there was nothing about her being trans. Nothing. She was a character on the show and no one even made it a thing. So I was like, okay, there's hope. There's definitely progress. I wanted to touch upon what you were saying earlier, Luis, that there's this LGBTQ part of us, LGBTQI part of us. But there are so many other parts we have. I, for instance, have a disability, and I remember the first time I was in a group for queer and trans people with disabilities and how amazing that was. What a safe space that was, finally to feel like understood and seen. And in Hungary, there are more and more groups who work on intersectional oppression, intersectional justice. There are more and more Roma LGBTQI activists who are doing amazing work. Some of them have spoken on Budapest Pride podcasts before. There is now a group run by, led by, and started by deaf and hard of hearing LGBTQ people. So there is like a lot more organizing happening now than 10 years ago, for instance. Kevin, can you talk a little bit about the importance of these spaces where you don't get to be LGBTQ only, but you get to be yourself with all of these other identities and feel represented and seen. Can you talk about the importance of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really important to, you know, while we're building community, we need to talk about intersectionality, especially, you know, I'm from Los Angeles and a lot of people think LA is like super LGBT accepting and there's so many groups, but even in Los Angeles, there's so many different areas, so many different cultural groups, and we all need that LGBT support, right? And sometimes we have these big entities like, you know, the big LGBT orgs, like the corporation, but they kind of forget about just rural areas. And the work that I do is so local and specific. It's really like just a local community grassroots org. And I think the issues we address is really so impactful. And we end up becoming this big voice because we center, you know, Black and Brown LGBT people. We talk about the injustices. We talk about, you know, gender and racial justice, and we center that. Even our youth who are Black and Brown, we always say, like, you know, it's different to be LGBT when you're Black and Brown, and there's a different cultural aspect of it, right? We acknowledge that, you know, we were the first ones that were part of that riot at Stonewall. We acknowledge that sometimes we're forgotten. We acknowledge that sometimes we're erased. Yes, we talk about like entertainment, but sometimes it's all white LGBT people. So we're always waiting for to be represented and we're always left behind. So when we talk about, you know, representation and intersectionality, I think that was the focus that the true being of Somos is to center that. And it could be seen with our youth work. A lot of our youth are always at the school district meetings, they're always doing like media stuff. And it's always so weird to people. It's like, oh, there's a brown Latino person doing a media interview, and it shocks everybody, right? And then I think it reminds people like there's so much in our, you know, LGBTQ, ABCD, there's so much more, and there's so much representation that needs to be there because we all are here trying to really thrive and really just celebrate our identities. And sometimes they connect with others. And sometimes we're represented highly in detention centers, in prisons, and we're often forgotten. And when we talk about like youth homelessness in Los Angeles, like 40% are LGBTQ youth that are homeless, and most Black and Brown. So yeah, when we talk about, we need to look about class, we need to look at class, we need to look at the economic, who's getting jobs and who isn't, who's being a sex worker, are youth engaging in sex work, and these are the things that, you know, we don't want for our youth. And with laws like that are passing, sometimes that creates a whole nother subworld of like alcohol and drug dependency, survival sex work. Like there's so much, right? And high prison population. So that's what, as a small group, as a small grassroots org, you know, that's what we fight against. And I think the people who are listening and watching is, never think you're too small. If you could grab just one or up to three people, like you could do so much movement work. Gisela, you know, when Somos started, it was just like three of us, and we're still here 7 years later. We just barely transitioned to a 501c3, got our nonprofit status, and we have been able to, you know, bring programs, a men of color support group, a women of color, a youth program. We have a youth program, and we don't even have grants. And we've been having a youth program for middle school and high school students, and they've been doing so much amazing work. So never think like you can't strategize, you can't organize, you can't build together with community, because this is the perfect time to build, because we're whenever anything legislative, it's like everybody wants to connect and like, what can we do? I think it's just being engaging with everybody, coming together, okay, what's the next action? What's the next step? What's the next, you know, let's put a banner or let's all wear red shirts or whatever it might be, right? We're very creative, right? Because LGBT people are always reimagining the world. And we're always trying to like create the world that, you know, as a little kid, or like, I wish like everything was queer and rainbow. but yeah, we have to remember where that root and where we come from and how we celebrate ourselves. But yeah, sorry, I went on a big touch, but yeah.
No, thank you for every word. Yes, absolutely. Luis, you were nodding a lot. Anything you would like to add?
That it is beautiful to hear you. Like you give this, like Kevin, you give this wholesome energy that like I get why all of the children are so happy with you, like, and Judith, like, it's really important to have this kind of people that can guide you. And so, like, thank you for doing what you do. Like, it's just great to hear you. Yeah.
Thank you, Luis. Yes, it's very much, you know, with youth, it's very much me, like, you know, you have to have fun with them. You have to laugh, you have to giggle. You sometimes have to laugh at the system that's putting you down, right? We have to throw a little shade at them. We have to make little jokes because these are the things that make us happy. These are the things that still make us thrive. And if we still have that connection with somebody, I think that's where we know we will still be here and be present and still live that legacy that, you know, our queer and trans ancestors have given us. And that's something that can't be taken away from us, even with any law, even with any person so against us, like, you know, we're gonna have each other's back.
Yeah, amen to that. Yes, and I also wanted to address that, coming back to the context of Hungary, there's a lot of work ahead of NGOs and groups, and this is a shout out to funders to keep funding this work. But I think it would be very, very important if funding didn't go just to mainstream LGBTQI organizations, but also to trans groups who are seriously underfunded across the world, across the region, and in Hungary also. And also to some of these sub-movements within the movement that are extremely important and they need support. Hungary is not only a homo and transphobic country, but it's also an incredibly racist country. So what is going to happen to our Roma LGBTQI peers? What kind of, we need support for these communities, and it's also up to funders, but I think it's also up to the bigger organizations to facilitate that support in some way. Does anyone have any thoughts on this? And then we're soon going to wrap up. So I would also like to wave to our audience and say, if you have any questions, please type it in the comment box, comment box. I think you're watching on Facebook. And then the Budapest Pride admin is gonna send it to us. No question is silly or too small. Feel free to ask now that we still have these brilliant people on our Zoom. Okay, yes, any responses to what I said? Importance of funding.
Yeah, well, if it's like we work with a funder that is feminist, and without that support, we wouldn't be able to do what we do, right? Because we are five people working for this, and like the funding is so important, but also that to have a horizontal like relationship with funding organizations, because then you can create together. And it's also very important, the flexibility that fundings can give you. Right now in Mexico, it has been so difficult for civil society to do things because the current administration is in war against these civil organizations. So to have at least the support of a funder it makes life a lot easier for us. And well, at least like that's the end of that support goes to community. So like it really is just to create a better world. And it's really important. Like we really depend on this funding to make a good job. Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. Kevin?
Yeah, I mean, funding, you know, I've learned that is the most thing for is the most important thing for sustainability. I think one of the things is we, as I was saying, we are reimagining the world, right? But sometimes we need that support and that those funds, the coins that to uplift our movements. And it's important for philanthropy just to acknowledge that we exist, right? Sometimes we see even like corporations, right? They change their logos to like rainbows, but then they're not even hiring LGBT people or they're not donating to LGBT orgs. And sometimes when they do, they donate to those LGBT orgs that already have too much funding and they don't even know what to do with it. And we're like, oh, we're always here. We're trying to protect our people. So it's very important for funders and people who even donate to recognize, acknowledge us and recognize those people who are working on the ground. I know going into the nonprofit world, now I have to like try to convince people like, you know, support us in the Valley. We're a small group. And then they're like, where's your data? Where's your this? Where's your that? I'm like, well, I have a whole community behind me. Like, this is my data. And then, yeah, it's sometimes it is hard to convince people or philanthropists to donate. But when they see that community power, it's I know that's how I was been able to get at least the first few grants that I've been gotten. And it's also been able for me to have some like economic recovery, even like post COVID, doing mutual aids, providing youth with food services. And all important, right? And I think when we talk about funding and just funding into LGBT orgs, it's pennies compared to what other organizations are getting. And we need to put more funding into LGBT groups. And there is so many studies out there. It's out of like all funding and philanthropy, like LGBT orgs get like 5-6% out of 100, like it's not that much. And we think like, oh, we have enough, we need to get more, we need to invest more. We need every community to have a center. We need every ally training, we need everything, right? Because if we do wanna create a world with for safe for trans and queer people, we need to invest in them.
Absolutely. And funding is even more scarce for trans groups. There's also, and intersex groups, I must say, there are quite a, I think, two reports out there, which are about the state of intersex funding and trans funding. And we need support. Thank you so much. We haven't received any questions, Pout, but maybe it was like, great, and you shared so much that no one has any questions, so I'll be positive about that. Is there anything like a final word or something that you would like to say before we do another wave of sending energy and warmth and strength? I'm turning to all of you if there is any final thing you would like to share.
Dodo, I wanted to say that because of this law that was coming out, and I guess it's something that Kevin also touched on, that when the community is under attack, that gives people energy, like you, to fight back. And I have seen Hungarians fighting back. I've seen their messages. I've seen the mothers organizing private phone banks to talk to people who need help. I've seen people who I knew were active a little bit, but become even more visible, especially now when they can be criminalized for being visible. And I just want to tell all those Hungarians, you know what? you're so brave. You're the best. You're awesome. I'm so proud of being half Hungarian. I'm so proud of this community, and I'm so happy that to know that. No, I want to tell you that we see you, Tanya and her families, Luis and his friends, Kevin and his group in the valley. We all see you, Hungary, and we love you, and we stand with you. We really do. And it is true that when you're under attack, is when you can fight back. And I hope anyone who sees this, who has any money, please donate to other organizations, especially the trans organizations, please.
Thank you, Gisela. Amen. Anyone else? Final words? I'm seeing you, Luis, but no one else can see you.
I think Gisela said everything. We see you and we are here. Anything that we can do, we'll do it, because like we had said, we are the family, like a very large family. So we are here for anything. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's one of the best things about being trans or queer, that we have a massive family, like a huge family. So I really hope that you can lean into that, everyone in Hungary right now. And thank you so much, Luis. Thank you so much, Tanya. Thank you, Gisela. Thank you, Kevin. And thank you, Bambi, who had to leave a while ago. Thank you so much for Andy, Mate, and everyone else at Budapest Pride who have made this panel possible. I'm wishing you the best of luck for Pride Month, which is kicking off on the 25th of June in Hungary and several other cities, and also for the Pride March, which I really hope can go ahead. And you're amazing, you're powerful, you're resilient, and we're here with you sending support. So in the next 30 seconds or so, we're gonna send you another huge wave of love, warmth, strength, energy, solidarity, and your chosen family is totally holding your hand. So again, if you want to lean into it, and everyone on the panel is nodding, you just can't see it. I get to see everyone is nodding and smiling beautifully. So if you are back at home in Hungary and you're an LGBTQI person, a young person or a parent or a teacher or anyone hard hit by this law, I hope you can lean into this. We're sending it now. Feel it. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for tuning in. Budapest Pride, you're awesome for having a Spotify channel. I was like, oh my God, when I first saw it, it's really cool. I've been listening to so many of your podcasts, and apparently you also have an Insta and YouTube and Twitter and Facebook. So everyone follow Budapest Pride, and thank you for our amazing panelists, and have an awesome day. And Andy, I have no idea what to do now. So I will leave it up to you to close the Zoom or something. Bye.